two bills up for a public hearing and possible work session today. It's highly likely that that simply means public hearing. House Bill 2535, as proposed to be amended, and Senate Bill 700. I have sign-up sheets here, and so far I don't have any indication of anyone being more than 100 miles from Salem. We'll try to keep track of that. I will mention to folks in attendance that our protocol is to invite in legislators who arrive at various times because they have to get back to their committees. So you will see us following that protocol from time to time. In a moment, we'll be convening. In fact, I'll do it now. I'll combine the public hearing on Senate Bill 700 and House Bill 2535 and call us into session on that combined public hearing. I would mention, too, that we do not have so many witnesses that I will feel a need to artificially limit time. However, I do ask everyone to keep their remarks somewhat to the point and to get to the issues that they're specifically concerned about in the legislation. Mr. Horton, can you summarize Senate Bill 700 and then perhaps a thumbnail sketch of what's being proposed on 2535?
Certainly, Mr. Chairman. In fact, I'll do a thumbnail sketch of both. First, on Senate Bill 700A, this has to do with gun shows and flea markets. And very briefly, what the bill primarily does, and I'm not touching on every single point of the bill here, is it does require that a person who displays for sale or sells, leases, or otherwise transfers a firearm while at a gun show, as that term is defined in the bill, be a licensed dealer or conduct all transfers through a licensed dealer. It prohibits transfer of firearms at flea markets, which is defined to exclude certain garage sales and fundraisers by certain organizations, and that does include a provision regarding the IRS, as I recall. House Bill 2535 in its original form had to do with some sentencing, and again, that is not before the committee today, but there are the dash two amendments before the committee on House Bill 2535. And there are several different components to those, and probably the most pertinent points in regards to the Dash 2 amendments are a requirement for a background check on a purchaser at any site where over 25 firearms are available for transfer, and there are exceptions for a person's own residence and a single person estate sale. The fee for the background checks is at $8.50 per transaction. It allows any citizen to contact the state police for background checks, and further provisions in the Dash 2 amendments are before the committee in a written summary.
Thank you, Mr. Horton. Because we have the sponsor of Senate Bill 700 here, along with the chair of the Senate Judiciary Committee, and I do note the chair of the Senate Judiciary Committee was in the room first, I will first call up Senator Neil Bryant. Good morning. Welcome to the committee.
Good morning. For the record, Neil Bryant, State Senator from District 27, which is Central Oregon, and I'll be very brief in my comments. As Chair of Judiciary, I decided to give Senate Bill 700 a hearing, and then later on, after numerous hours of testimony, put it into work session and ultimately supported it on the floor of the Senate and sent it over to the House. My thought pattern as I approached this was this. It's good public policy to ask the question when you sell firearms in a commercial setting whether or not you're dealing with someone who has a criminal record or who has a mental illness or who has a restraining order for domestic violence or others to make sure that they're not buying new firearms. And we currently do this in Oregon as it relates to your commercial firearms person. But we didn't do it for gun shows and, of course, at flea markets. And to me, those are commercial settings. So it was a logical extension of that good public policy to include it in those commercial settings. And that's what the bill does. There's 160 gun shows a year in Oregon. They're very popular. They do a lot of firearms transactions. And this would require the InstaCheck to be used there. On the flea market situation, I chose to say you can't sell firearms at a flea market because if you left that door open, that would be the next gun show. And again, you wouldn't have, to me that's a commercial setting and you wouldn't have the InstaCheck, so you'd have the same problems. Convincing testimony to me was provided by the InstaCheck people. And by the way, my committee went and took a look at the InstaCheck and saw how that worked. I think there was 217 arrests in 18 or 19 months dealing with people trying to buy firearms from licensed dealers who shouldn't have been doing that. And that just shocked me. It shows that some people aren't very smart or they don't understand the law, but even when they were told, I need this information to phone into the Oregon State Police to check the computer for these purposes, they still gave them the information. And, of course, 10 of those people had a serious mental problem. And so I think as it related to the commercial setting, with the way the present law exists, we have provided some additional public safety, and probably someone would have been hurt or killed if we wouldn't have done the instant check at the commercial retail dealer. This bill will not reduce violent crime dramatically. Nothing we do will, but it will help. And I think it'll also help deter straw man purchases, because the person who buys for others does leave a record that indicates, you know, that the police will be able to come back and check if this gun was in fact used in a crime. I was convinced that this is not unconstitutional infringement on our right to bear arms. It is an inconvenience, but it's a reasonable inconvenience. It's similar to the one we suffer when we go to airports and we go through the electronic check and sometimes the search of our baggage. That's certainly an inconvenience on our constitutional right to free travel. But I know we all feel comforted by the fact as that plane takes off and lands that we have in fact done that. So, and I think the Senate Bill 700 as it passed the Senate would be viewed to something similar to the metal detector. Most gun owners will welcome this inconvenient intrusion as a necessary public policy in today's society to make it a little safer. So, Mr. Chair, that concludes my testimony, and good luck with these two bills.
Thank you very much, Senator. We appreciate your attendance this morning. Looks like there are no questions. See you later on. Senator Burdick, good morning. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Jenny Burdick, State Senator from District 6, and I appreciate this opportunity to testify on Senate Bill 700, which is the bill I brought into the process. It was actually, the sponsor is actually the Senate Judiciary Committee, at the request of the State Sheriff's Association, the State Police Chiefs Association, the District Attorneys Association, the Portland Police Bureau, and myself. I appreciate the opportunity to testify on that and also to make some comments about the approach that you have been taking in this committee, which has many beneficial attributes to it. Senate Bill 700, as the Senate Judiciary just said, is a very simple measure. It basically does one thing. It closes the gun show loophole. And I think one thing I've learned around here is if you want to get a thorough analysis of something you're doing, just have the relating clause relating to firearms, and you'll get attention that you never dreamed was even there. But it's been a very constructive process because of that, and I've certainly learned a lot. One of the reasons that the bill was able to pass through the Senate is it is a very simple bill. It is single subject. It does that one thing. It does not have any impact whatsoever on the state police record-keeping requirements. I know that there's been a lot of discussion about keeping records on firearms purchases and a lot of attempts to bring that into the discussion of Senate Bill 700. But the fact of the matter is that Senate Bill 700 does absolutely nothing about records. All it would do is potentially increase the use of the state Instatec system for handguns because more guns would have to be checked in order to be sold legally. That's the whole point of Senate Bill 700. And for that reason, it has no financial impact. The Instatec system is a self-supporting system. It costs $10 per check, and that supports the system. So it's a very simple bill. It does nothing to interfere with any legitimate gun owner's right to buy a firearm. Its only purpose is to keep criminals from buying guns. And that's a strength and its weakness. Now, the chairman, and I commend you for your efforts, has been trying very hard to develop a more comprehensive approach. And if I could just say a couple of things about the approach. I think it's very ambitious trying to deal with firearms in a comprehensive manner in this kind of environment. We all know that this issue raises intense feelings and views on all sides of the issues. So I certainly commend you for your courage in trying to take that on. The most positive part of the House Bill 2535 amendment that I have seen is the fact that you bring all guns into the Oregon State Insta-Check system. I think that's a positive policy direction for both gun owners and people who care about public safety. I am concerned about the record-keeping issues that have arisen. I think it's very important to keep the record-keeping requirements that we have, which is 5 years for handguns. And at the federal level, which is now the long guns are covered under a federal system, there's a shorter record-keeping requirement. But I think it's very, very important not to reduce any of the record-keeping requirements at a time when we are asking more and more of our law enforcement to trace weapons that are used in crimes. Another positive thing about the proposal I've seen is that it opens up the state Insta-Check to private citizens. I think that's a very positive development because I know many people who can legally transfer firearms without a background check would nevertheless feel more comfortable if they could have access to a system that would allow them to check the criminal background of the person they're selling to. I know most people, most gun owners that I talk to would be devastated if they thought that a firearm that they had sold would end up in the wrong hands and hurt somebody or be used in some inappropriate way. So those are the positive things. There are some things in the proposal that trouble me. I have, Oregon has over half of its households are gun-owning households. And I've said from the very beginning of this discussion that we will not get anywhere on reasonable measures to reduce gun violence unless we include gun owners. And indeed, if you look at the public hearing that was held before the Senate Judiciary, on our side of the issue, on the pro-700 side of the issue, I would wager that over half of the people who testified were, in fact, gun owners. Not just the police people who came, but people like Roy Jackson, who's the owner of the gun broker in Tigard, and Clackamas, he's a gun dealer, federally licensed dealer, he testified in favor. People like Paul Esselstyn, who's a firefighter in Springfield, was one of the first people on the scene at Thurston, an adamant gun owner. He started out his testimony by reeling out all the firearms that he personally owned, and then he gave very impassioned testimony in favor of Senate Bill 700 because of its potential to prevent things like Thurston and issues that happen when people get hold of guns who shouldn't have them. So gun owners are very much, the gun owners that I talk to are very much on board, and indeed you can see it on a poll. The Oregon Medical Association did a poll in late February, and this was before Littleton, and they actually broke it down as to gun owners and non-gun owners, and there were 50% of the people polled were from gun-owning households. And of the people who themselves own guns, 78% favored background checks at gun shows. That's an overwhelming number. The overall favorability rate for this measure was 86%. And if you look farther into the poll, the results are even more dramatic. I mean, we like to think in Oregon that, well, it's just those city people in Portland and Eugene who want tighter gun laws, and the rest of the people in Oregon, the suburban people, the rural people, don't want stronger gun laws. But the poll puts the lie to that. The poll says that all over Oregon, the lowest you can even get geographically broken down is 79%, and that's in eastern Oregon. That's an overwhelming number. In fact, there are places in Oregon that poll higher in support for this than the Portland metropolitan area. One of those is Clackamas and Washington counties combined. So it has overwhelming public support. It is, I guess the word that I've heard used most often in connection with this bill is it's a no-brainer. And I'm not insulted by that because that was its very intent. It was intended to do one thing, and it was intended to do it well. Senate Bill 700 does it well. We worked very hard on it in the Senate, and my predecessor, Senator Bryant, who's chairman of the Senate Judiciary, did an incredible job of fashioning this bill into a product that was as least, the least disruptive it could possibly be on legitimate gun owners while still doing the job. So I wanted to, I have some material that I will leave for the committee. One is a piece on gun shows and crime that shows the breakdown of the study they did in Portland that shows a significant number of guns confiscated from juveniles came from gun shows. Another is just a very brief summary of Senate Bill 700. And then this other sheet that I have is a list of supporters, which takes up a whole page, and it crosses the political spectrum. But I wanted to close my comments today with an email that I received from Roy Jackson, who I mentioned before, who's the owner of the Gun Broker, a very, you know, obviously very gun-oriented guy. He sells them for a living. And here's what he said, with permission, Mr. Chairman, if I could read this brief email. I own two gun stores in the Portland area. In the last 2 weeks in my Tigard store, we had 5 sales denied. 4 of the people were on probation, and 1 had a restraining order. The response of 2 were, when's the next gun show? I can get a gun there with no paperwork. 2 more just replied, I'll get one at the next gun show. The one with the restraining orders laughed and said, there are too many gun shows around for me to be worried about not getting a gun. These are not isolated incidents. They happen every month, all year long, at both my stores, and most likely at other gun stores as well. They happen at the gun shows themselves. A gun show dealer himself told me yesterday the same thing happens to him at the shows, only the people don't have to drive anywhere. They only have to walk across the aisle to get a gun without paperwork or a background check. Signed, Roy Jackson. That's the perspective of a gun dealer. So, Mr. Chairman, if there are any questions that the committee has, I would be happy to answer them about the background of Senate Bill 700 or its content or anything else you'd like to ask.
Thank you, Senator. Representative Gianella has indicated she has a question.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Burdick, you mentioned Senate Bill 700 would prevent things like Thurston.
No, I did not say that.
What did you say?
I said that Paul Esselstein, the firefighter from from Springfield, came to testify because he thought that measures like 700 would help prevent things like Thurston. I don't think we can call a bill this simple the end-all and be-all solution to the gun violence problem.
That's so sincere.
Senator, this is a whole subject has such a broad impact in so many different people. Given what are in the dash 2s to 2535, is that something that you could support?
I could support parts of it, but not all of it. I talked to a lot of gun dealers and a lot of gun owners just in the course of my conversations, and not one time that I've talked to someone about 700, not one time has a gun owner turned to me and said, yes, I like the background checks, but I must have concealed handgun reciprocity and I must have records destruction. That has not happened once. I don't believe the people of Oregon today are looking for ways to loosen our gun laws. We have some of the loosest gun laws in the United States of America. I believe people are looking away for ways to reasonably tighten gun laws to keep guns out of the hands of criminals and children.
All right. So if this bill were to pass and it provides the background checks that you want, you wouldn't support it?
I cannot support a bill. I'm in partnership with the law enforcement community on this. I cannot support a bill that would weaken any gun law, and specifically I cannot support a bill that would require records destruction beyond what we have now.
Thank you very much, Senator. We appreciate your coming this morning.
Thank you for the opportunity.
And I'll mention that I'll be calling Attorney General Hardy Myers in a moment. I'm sensitive, too, to calling up elected public officials. I have one more elected legislator, however, and we're trying to get them back to their committees. So Representative Randy Leonard, did you want to testify?
You wouldn't mind, Mr. Chair, and I was hoping I'd bring...
Certainly. Come on up. It's called bootstrapping, you know.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Randy Leonard. I am state representative from District 21, Southeast Portland. I'm also really more to the point for the purpose of this testimony and a lieutenant with Portland Fire Bureau. Have been for 22 years. And the reason that I come here today and have been so dedicated to this issue, and you'll note that my name's not even on the bill, so there's no pride of authorship on this issue with me. But as a firefighter and a person that lives in the Portland community, I am more than I want to be intimately aware of the violence guns do on human beings. Firefighters, unfortunately, and Pat's going to speak to this, I think, in a lot more depth than I am, are first on the scene oftentimes when a police officer is shot or a citizen is shot or somebody is killed with a gun. And it's the kind of experience that in our profession we seek not to have to repeat. Therefore, I believe that Senate Bill 700, or its concept, if we want to put it like that, is something that needs to happen this session. We need to, as a legislature, Mr. Chair, make a statement that we are going to do all that we can to minimize violence done by guns on human beings, and specifically violence done by guns on human beings by criminals. Senate Bill 700, or its concept, simply attempts to keep guns out of the hands of criminals who would do harm to us, our children, or our public safety personnel. Pat is now here. I asked Paul Esselstyn to come, who is a Springfield firefighter, captain of the Springfield Fire Department. Paul and I actually grew up together and went to high school together. I went to work for Portland Fire. He went to work for Springfield Fire. Paul was the first on the scene, one of the first on the scene in Springfield, and testified eloquently in the Senate committee on his support of, as Senator Burdick said, Senate Bill 700, and gave the reasons why. After the incident at Littleton, he has declined any public comments and has been deeply affected by that incident. And so Pat is our state president and has agreed to come and, in Paul's place, speak for him.
Thank you, Representative Leonard. Good morning, Mr. West.
Mr. Chairman, pleased to be here. Pat West with the Oregon State Firefighters. And to put things in perspective, I'm a captain on the Salem Fire Department, 24 years as a firefighter. I have certainly not dealt with anything as devastating as Springfield or Littleton. But I kind of want to back up just a little. Paul Esselstyn was the first game engine company captain at Thurston. Lived in the community for over 20 years. His daughter is going to Thurston at the time. She was a senior when was supposed to be at the breakfast where all this happened. And I'm going to kind of do a firsthand experience as to what went through Paul's mind at the incident and where he comes from and came from. Again, Paul's a very avid hunter, fisherman, NRA member, all those things. He still has the guns, but has certainly altered his opinion on the availability for guns, certainly for children and criminals. But you have to understand that he arrived, you know, first in on a beautiful morning like this just about a year ago. And when he walked down the hall, the first thing he sees is two children laying in the hallway. They're obviously deceased. He knows that. This is before he gets into the cafeteria where the mass chaos is. And the whole time he's going in there, he's thinking, where's my daughter? My daughter. These are our children we're talking about. This is in Oregon. This is All-American USA High School. And he cannot find his daughter. She's supposed to be at this breakfast, as it turns out. She forgot a book. She was supposed to be giving a speech at the senior banquet. And luckily, she forgot it. She turned around and went home to pick up the speech and missed the incident. She actually came in right behind the first police officer. But unbeknownst to him, he's in there dealing with the incident, which they did a very fine job, I might add. Everybody was to the hospital in under an hour. Very, very extreme conditions. But the point is that they started a process to keep this from happening somewhere else. That was the Blue Ribbon of Promise. Everybody here, I'm sure, has heard of that. They've tried to, the whole goal was to use the unfortunate incident in Springfield to keep it from happening somewhere else in Oregon or the United States. So when the incident happened at Columbine High, it was more than Paul could handle, honestly. He just was inundated with press, with the internal organization that firefighters have is very strong. So the people that were at the Littleton incident are people that we know. We knew the person that was brought in as the PIO for the incident. We knew the incident commander, union president of the Littleton local. So what happens is he's then inundated with calls from these people saying, you know, what do we do to stop it? Again, they're dealing with the same situation. They now are dealing with their children. And it's in Colorado, and it's happened again. And so the point is that we have to deal with the issues that we can to keep guns from the unstable children, in this case, young adults, and this bill will help do that. I can't do justice to it. I'm speaking, you know, for Paul, but unfortunately he couldn't be here today.
Thank you very much, Mr. West. Did you have a question, Ms. Angino?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. West, for coming. My son's a fireman, too. And that's a very sad story. Our hearts go out to the people and the parents and the communities. As far as the Thurston incident, those guns were not bought at a gun show. Those were bought by parents. I just wanted to make that statement. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Representative Gianella, that's not accurate. I believe three of the weapons, maybe two, were purchased at a gun show.
Well, let's assume.
Mr. Chair, I don't believe that is.
Excuse me. I don't think it's material. I'll explain why. Let's assume, for purposes of argument, that all of the firearms used in the Thurston incident were purchased at a gun show. As I understand it, they were purchased by law-abiding adult citizens who would have received a clearance. Under the current system or as proposed under Senate Bill 700 or as proposed under House Bill 2535, whether or not we can always anticipate what someone will do who receives a clearance, whether or not they're going to provide them to their children or allow their children access to firearms are further issues that we have to address. They're only partially addressed in 2535, which says that it wouldn't affect Kip Kinkle because he was over 15 or 15 or over. So I just don't want us to get us off onto that side road. The main point being that you're trying to reduce access to firearms by criminals and others who are disqualified, such as juveniles, because of the potential for harm.
Mr. Chair, I fully agree with your statement. I was just saying, as a matter of fact, it has been determined that I believe the two shotguns that were used were purchased at a gun show. I have inquired because I understand that it has been represented that an 18-year-old young woman purchased them. A woman who is 18 years old now purchased them at a gun show. I haven't tried to inquire as to when those weapons were purchased, and it has been undetermined whether she purchased them when she was 18 or 17.
If are you talking about Columbine?
Yes, sir. Yeah.
Yes, I think you misspoke. It's not Thurston.
I'm sorry.
I said Thurston.
I will say, for the record, I don't want us to get into that side joint. I think the focus of the issue is background checks,
precisely,
gun shows, and
availability.
And so we'll focus on that. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Our Representative Bowman has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Have you gentlemen had the opportunity to review House Bill 2535, the -2 amendment?
Briefly.
I have not, Representative Bowman.
And
if you would be kind enough to give me your view on House Bill 2535, Representative.
I might be a surprise to some, and a co-sponsor of the bill that would allow reciprocity.
You?
Yes, me. And I am a gun owner. And it's unfortunate we've gotten to the point in this debate where, as according to some of my email, I'm a communist socialist that would do harm to the Second Amendment, or you're a God-fearing American on the other side. There are some of us that are actually responsible gun owners that believe in responsibility and believe in doing what the right thing is. The governor has indicated he will not support that bill. Again, though my name's on the bill, I have no pride of authorship. I understand reality. I don't support reciprocity in the Dash 2 amendments. The records check is a bottom line with police agencies. They do not want the records destroyed any less than 5 years. So for those reasons, I can't support the Dash 2 amendments.
Thank you very much, Mr. West. Representative Leonard?
Thank you very much.
Appreciate your coming this morning.
Thank you.
Attorney General Hardy Myers. Thanks for your patience. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Chair Mannix and members, for the record, I'm Hardy Myers, Attorney General, and I appreciate the opportunity to testify briefly on behalf of the Department of Justice in support of Senate Bill 700. It seems to me, Mr. Chair and members, if we think about our overall policy efforts in relation to firearms in our state and in our country, that we are trying to proceed simultaneously on at least three different fronts, have been at least, in shaping policy. One is to protect and preserve the rights of law-abiding Oregonians to firearms ownership for purposes of collection, recreation, very importantly in our state, and defense. And I think it's a sometimes overlooked fact that while we talk about the Second Amendment to the United States Constitution, we have an Oregon constitutional provision dealing with firearms, which is framed more in terms of personal defense explicitly than, and there's no reference to that really in the federal constitution. So that's one direction we are attempting at all times to pursue. A second is to prevent firearms from coming into the hands of persons who, for one or another reason, we have judged as policy not to be appropriately in their possession. And I guess a third, third direction has been to exclude from ownership by anybody certain kinds of weapons which cannot be rationalized from any legitimate standpoint of recreation or defense simply because of their nature. And it seems to the department, Mr. Chair and members, that Senate Bill 700 is a logical step forward in regard to the effort to try to exclude from ownership, from access to weapons, persons who are not appropriately in that situation, that we have a gap in the total coverage of that basic policy, which is already state law, that needs to be covered. And so it's for that purpose that we would hope that the committee would approve Senate Bill 700, or its equivalent if you are proceeding in some wider setting in which you're also addressing this issue. I might say in closing that the issue of the access of inappropriate individuals to firearms for our department has a couple of dimensions that we're keenly aware of. One, of course, is the general public interest and potential harm to the public as a whole. But the other is, of course, the issue of heightened danger to our law enforcement personnel, with whom we are privileged to be partners through our criminal justice division. And their protection specifically, or enhanced protection specifically, along with that of the general public, is, I think, very much a focus of this bill, and should be. So, again, Mr. Chair, thank you, and I do hope that the committee will approve this bill or its equivalent.
Thank you, Mr. Myers. Are there any questions? Seeing none, we appreciate your patience in waiting and appreciate your testimony.
Thank you.
Don Helen from Oregon Gun Owners. And while you're coming up, Mr. Helen, go ahead, come on up. I'm going to ask Patsy Wood to check to see if there's any further list of names. I'm going to cut off any other additional sign-ups as of now. If anybody's more than 43 minutes late to the hearing, unless they came from out of town, we're going to cut them off so I can accommodate the people who have already signed up.
And those other folks, unless they're from out of town, we may give them a chance to speak tomorrow, but... Okay, it's blank. So if you signed up, you're on the list, and I'll ask quickly, is there anyone who came into the room who was not aware of the sign-up requirement? I don't want to exclude you if you did come in here and wanted to testify. You can raise your hand if you're in that group. All right, so I've got the names of all those who've signed up. We will call each of these persons to testify. If you hold your remarks to about 5 minutes or less, we'll be able to get everybody in before we get dragged down to the floor for session. One more gentleman to sign up. All right, sir, I'll make sure we call on you, too. Mr. Helen, go ahead.
Thank you, Chair Mannix, members of the committee. For the record, John Helen with Oregon Gun Owners. With regards to Senate Bill 700, generally speaking, we believe that this bill poses a lot more problems than it purports to create, than it purports to solve. And for that reason, we encourage you to vote no on Senate Bill 700. First, the implementation language of the bill, the regulatory mechanism that it attempts to instill, is problematic, and thus we think it's bad policy. The enforcement language, the enforcement ability of the language that's in the bill just raises a lot of problems for gun shows, the implementation of a gun show. It causes so many problems that we have a feeling, and we've heard from gun show promoters who believe that it would have the effect of causing many of them to turn key and walk away from a gun show. And we think that any policy that passes this body should not have that effect. Second, one of the mechanism for requiring dealers to be the persons who run the checks creates an unfair and a competitive advantage over the regular hobbyists and dealers there, because they will be the only individuals who can run a check. Therefore, they will charge a surcharge of $15 to $25. And we've already heard that that's going to be the case. And we feel that that's not an advantage to the hobbyist or the collector who is at the show, or even, because this bill addresses everybody who is at the show, that it's not a fairness, it's not a fair mechanism. There are other ways that you could do that if the will is there to address gun shows.
I'll pause for a moment and mention to the members what I'm going to do for purposes of time is wait till each person's finished their presentation, and I'll call members for questions. Go ahead, Mr. Helen.
Thank you. Third, we think that the definitions in the bill regarding garage sales, gun shows, flea markets, 501c status organizations cause more problems. It really begins to raise the issue of how do you enforce how, with regards to garage sales, for instance, how is a municipality going to know when somebody has held 3 garage sales or more and there are firearms present, et cetera? It just poses a lot of problems to try and figure out those, for the average citizen to try and figure out how they're going to comply with the law. We think those definitional problems are worth, therefore, addressing that somehow, whether you amend 700 or deal with it in 2535. But that is a reason that 700 should not be passed as it is A and gross. Next, promoter criminal liability. We would encourage you that if you're going to address gun shows and background checks, please do not give promoters criminal responsibility and liability for the actions of 15,000 people who cruise through their show in a weekend or even on a day at some shows. Again, by instilling a promoter criminal liability, it's a disincentive for them to be responsible and to host and provide these shows. And again, we think that any policy that discourages a promoter from wanting to sponsor a show is not a good policy for Oregon's gun owners. And last, we believe that Senate Bill 700 leaving in place the two-tiered federal check system for long guns and the handgun system for state for the state police is not good policy. Oregon's gun owners would benefit better by having a one-stop check, so to speak, because we have no faith. I mean this clearly. We have no faith that the federal government is going to treat Oregon's gun owners any friendlier than the current system already is. We believe that the possibility of a federal instant check fee of $15 to $17 is very likely. And with regards to retention of records, we think the federal government is keeping them longer than perhaps the state police are authorized now with 5 years to keep them. So we believe that folding long guns, if you're going to go with the policy, folding long guns under a state system is better policy. Therefore, 700 should not be your vehicle of choice. Now, with regards to 2535, again, if the political will is there, and I think it is, if the political will is there to do something about background checks at gun shows, 2535 is by far the better policy. With regards to records retention, It is Oregon gun owners' position that we would like to reduce the 1 year down to 1 year on handguns for purchasers. But again, I'm not sure if the political will is there to do that. If it's not, we would encourage a bill that addresses everybody's concerns but mitigates the damages imposed upon gun owners. And with regards to reciprocity, my understanding is that's been dropped from the bill, from 2535, from the dash twos. I don't see it in there. There is a provision for allowing allowing people from other states to apply for an Oregon CHL. Of course, we would support that under Oregon standards. With that, I'm open for any questions. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Mr. Helen. I would observe that the process of legislating, although it's been sometimes described as being akin to making sausage, could also be described as a cleansing and strengthening process where you cleanse out destructive clauses and strengthen positive clauses. And it's not all over, not until the last gavel drops, but until the bill has been signed by the Speaker and the Senate President and the Governor. Then it's over. And until that happens, who knows what will happen. Representative Pozanski had a question for you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess in making this sausage, I want to make sure we don't have too much pork in it. So I'm going to ask a couple of questions about seeing if we can't make it a little leaner. Regarding the requirement that a licensed dealer run a criminal check at shows, is there anything that would stop this body from maybe putting some type of reasonable surcharge in place as compared to letting the market run its course?
What I didn't, Chairman Mannix, Representative Brzezinski, what I didn't mention in my testimony is that I also find it problematic that dealers be the ones who do the checks, because not only are there only a certain amount of dealers present at a show, but there are such a number of firearms transactions at a show that the potential for backlog and therefore the inefficiency of a show to run. Now, for some people, they may not care about that, and I grant them that. But for us, we want to make sure that the gun owner has the least intrusive experience at a gun show in complying with the law, and I don't believe that requiring dealers to do the check is going to be that least intrusive system.
But would you like to answer the question?
If you put a surcharge on it, that's going to be one way to address it, but I don't believe that solves the problem.
Chair, if I can have
one more
problem up.
Sure.
John, I guess the other thing is that we've seen the other bill, the 2535, where it basically would have a voluntary program for private sales. Do you not believe that that could somehow be blended with the concept of 700 to where an individual owner who goes to the sale, gets a booth, could actually have their cell phone there and actually run the checks on their own instead of going through a licensed dealer?
Well, certainly, if you open up the system to everybody, then you don't need the provision in Senate Bill 700 that requires dealers to do the checks.
Thank you.
That's an involvement.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to go back to an earlier statement you said, which was you want to make it as simple as possible for gun owners to be able to go to gun shows and buy guns. My question has to do with if the law in the state of Oregon says that anybody who purchases a firearm anywhere has to have a background check before they purchase it, then people who buy guns would know that before they went to a gun show or a flea market or anywhere else. And so my question is, why would that present more of a problem for people who are buying guns to have to do the check?
Chair Mannix, Representative Bowman, I'm confused with regards to your point that if the law required checks done anywhere.
My question was, if in fact we passed a law, this legislative body that said anybody in the state of Oregon who buys a gun has to do a background check, period. Doesn't matter where they buy it from. And that was the law, then people would know if they wanted to buy a gun that that's the process. My question to you was, you said that if we require this at gun shows, it would make it difficult or it would not be as easy for people to buy guns, and that would be problematic for gun owners. And my question is, why would that be problematic? Because we have the ability to change the law to just say everybody should have a check. So why would it be problematic just for that one industry?
Chair Mannix, Representative Bowman, I believe my testimony, I wanted to reflect that I believe it's problematic if with 700 the way it's written is problematic by requiring people to go through dealers. If you can make it easier for gun owners to abide by the law with the concept, you know, if the will is there for the concept of background checks at gun shows, or in your question, background checks every firearm transfer, the law should be, the policy should be that a gun owner can simply make a phone call themselves, or a seller can simply make a phone call themselves to a central system, i.e. the state police, and get the clearance. By going through dealers, we believe that is much, much, much more difficult and problematic for gun owners, and that if you can create a policy that allows them to make a call themselves and pay with a credit card, that that's easier, and that would be the preferred policy objective.
Mr. Chair, if I could follow up.
One more.
I'm sorry, I'm pretty ignorant. I've never been to a gun show. So if I was going to buy a gun at a gun show today, how would that process work?
Well, as you've heard testimony, Chair Maddox, Representative Bowman, you would go through the door, and if you bought from a dealer, a check's going to have to be done. If you bought from a hobbyist slash collector, a check would not have to be done. If you bought from somebody who was looking to trade a .30-06 for a .308, a check would not have to be done. So, but if you required under 700, were it to become law, a guy who walks through the door with a .30-06 looking for a .308, he would have to go find the dealer, pay the dealer either a mandated surcharge or whatever the market allows, and then you begin to find that a backlog is going to happen at a gun show while people are waiting for only a certain amount of dealers there to process the number of transactions that are going to be happening at a show. And I think that's key. You need to know there are going to be many, many transactions at a show. When you've got 15,000 people or more cruising through, you're having a lot of firearms transferred. And as a result, we want to make sure that the policy you put in place makes that as smooth as possible.
Representative Giannullo.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Hillen, how do your statistics compare with the earlier testimony of how gun owners feel about Senate Bill 700?
Chair Mannix, Representative Giannullo, the OMA, I think it's important, Senator Burdick did cite it correctly, however, there have been other people who have not cited the study correctly. The 86% supported the concept of background checks at gun shows. In other words, sure, put this policy in place, but they did not give an opinion on how that policy should be implemented. In other words, a lot of people have been saying the 700 is that 86%, and I would beg to differ. In fact, the correspondence I am receiving from our associates overwhelmingly say that 700A should not be passed in any way, shape, or form, and I'm also getting correspondence B that says this purports to solve a problem that is simply minute in detail compared with why are we not looking at increased penalties? Why are we not looking at, for instance, with Kip Kinkle, as one example, why was he not violated with the federal law charge of bringing a gun to school? Not only was he should have been expelled, but he was never charged with a federal law. He could have been held under that federal law for violating that federal law. So there are individuals who believe that, and I think they're right, enforcement of existing laws can have a major impact on much of the problem that we are trying to address with Senate Bill 700.
All right, thank you, Mr. One more, Representative Hansen.
Okay, on the logistics of getting all of the serving all the customers at the gun show, and you've got the record check, all of those record checks are done by the state police, right?
Chairman, Representative Hansen, currently,
yeah.
And with 700, the status quo would be handgun checks go through the state police, long gun checks through the feds.
But I guess my concern is if we're trying to create something that has a very smooth flow of customer service in terms of if you've got a lot of requests for checks, even if you've got 20 people simultaneously calling on cell phones or working individually, the backlog is still going. They're still going to have to get through the state police.
Chair Maddox, Representative Hansen, the state police anticipate and are ready for they already prepare for gun shows. They staff extras. They put extra staff on at a gun show. It is my understanding. Claudia Scott is here. She could probably elaborate on that for you. But they do prepare in the event of a gun show. Gun show promoters do let them know when shows are going to be happening so that they can staff up extra. And they anticipate with the addition of long guns, were you to go with 25-35, that they would then add extra staff and are prepared to follow suit and make sure that the smooth operation would continue that they have so far.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Hellman. We appreciate your coming this morning.
Thank you.
Al Elkins and Sandy Sanderson. Good morning and welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Al Elkins, and I'm representing the Oregon Hunters Association. With me today is Sandy Sanderson, president of the Oregon Hunters Association. I have a brief statement, Mr. Chair, that I will not read, but I will summarize. And I'd like to focus my attention to the first paragraph in the middle of that. We talk about the fact that the Oregon Hunters Association and other groups are 501c3, 4s, and 7s. And our funds help ensure a wildlife resort for present and future generations are generated through banquets and fundraisers utilizing auctions and raffles with firearms, generating majority of the funds. In 1998, OHA produced in excess of $229,000, and in 1999, so far we have produced in excess of $250,000, 67% of which of these funds are used for projects for wildlife. We gave a similar statement before the Senate committee, Mr. Chair, and they were gracious enough to put language into the bill, the A and Gross bill on page 3, lines 10 and 11. And my question today to the committee is this. We understand, we have been told that the language in the bill on page 3, lines 10 and 11 does meet our needs, and again, we have been told that it does not meet our needs. And so I come here today to ask the committee for direction, if I could work with committee's counsel or someone from the committee to determine if we, in fact, can continue our fundraising activities under the A and Gross bill.
Well, from just reading the bill, it says on page 3, this is the A and Gross, line 7, flea market does not include. And then you said a gun show, well, the bill says a gun show, a garage sale, or an event to raise funds for an organization described in Section 501c3 or 4 of the Internal Revenue Code. It does not include C7.
That's correct. And so, we'd like to do that. We have some chapters that are under that code. But we are confused if whether or not being under the flea market
that just means that you don't have the flea market prohibition applied to you. I don't know whether or not it means that the gun show definition applies to you.
Okay. We would sure like some direction as to what, if we need to have additional language or if this language is okay. And that's why I'm here today.
Chair,
yes.
Clarification on what a C7 is.
What is a C7?
Chairman Mannix, C7, as far as I can readily know, is how much can be donated to a political party or a political candidate. The 3, 4, and 7 are just definitions of those requirements.
All right. Thank you very much. We appreciate your testimony.
Okay. Thank you.
Tom Dixon, Oregon State Police. Good morning and welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Chair Mannix, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Tom Dixon. I'm the director of the Forensic Services Division of the Oregon State Police. The handgun instant check system falls within my area of responsibility. I've handed out written testimony, so I'm just going to touch on a couple items on that testimony. several of the other people testifying have already touched on some of the items covered. But first of all, a Department of Justice and Department of Treasury publication indicated we have more than 4,000 gun shows annually in our country, of which 160 are here in Oregon. We are rated 8th in the nation as far as numbers of gun shows. The InstaCheck that we now conduct for dealers, we have a denial rate of 2.73%. Most recently, that's changed to 2.77% considering the last 3 months of this year. So the denial rate at the licensed dealers is a substantial rate. Also, as mentioned earlier, we have recovered 192 stolen handguns that have gone through the dealers, and we've been involved in the apprehension or arrest of 251 different people that have tried to purchase through the licensed dealers. We recognize that the gun shows are a large loophole. The information we receive from dealers is, first of all, it's not uncommon for them to complain that it's not a level playing field, that they have to do background checks and the non-dealers do not. We also get the complaint that if someone comes to them and to purchase, and when they discuss doing the background or inform them, they say, fine, I'm going to go somewhere else. So at least some dealers are believed that either it's to get around an inconvenience or number two, get around an area of possibly a disqualification. So based on those items, I think the rest of my testimony pretty well covers that we are in support of Senate Bill 700.
Thank you very much.
Happy to answer any questions.
Don't see any questions right now. Appreciate your coming this morning.
Thank you.
Luis Martinez. Bienvenido. Good morning.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Luis Martinez, and I'm here to testify in opposition to Senate Bill 700. Despite what many proponents play this bill out to be, it is not a gun show bill. It is an expansion of gun registration in the state. And it was engraved in stone as such the very second that Governor Kitzhaber walked into the Senate Judiciary Committee and testified, and has threatened since then, to veto any bill that touches the 5-year record-keeping requirement of the Oregon State Police. I will be brief, and I would like to point out three very important points against this bill and against the idea of gun registration. First off, to put it in perspective, 1996, the population of the state of this Oregon, of this state, was 3.18 million citizens. In that same year, according to the Oregon Health Division, 28,900 people died of natural causes, accidental deaths, suicide. Total deaths, 28,900. And according to the Oregon State Police, the proponents, the backers of this bill, 50 handgun-related homicides. So we have 50 deaths out of 28,900, 50 deaths out of 3.18 million, and yet they are still pushing for this bill. Now, secondly, we have heard about the Oregon Medical Association poll. We've heard about it since the opening debate on this topic. And I have a copy of that report that was provided to me by Senator Burdick's office that she, I don't know if it was handed out or not. I didn't copy it. I'm afraid of infringing some kind of copyright law and getting into trouble that way. However, there are four questions that the OMA has released, as they state it relates to gun issues. And you look through those questions carefully, not one question, not one area does it ever mention, do you oppose or support gun registration? It's not there. It wasn't asked. Or, if it was asked, the Oregon Medical Association has not released that information. There are questions that they refuse to release. I tried to get them, and they wouldn't give it to me. So if you want to use the OMA poll as a barometer, use it. It doesn't say gun registration, so drop the language. Delete it from the books. Yes to gun check, no to gun registration. If the transaction has been approved, destroy the information. If the transaction was denied, retain that information, and which brings me to my third and final point. Another packet provided to me by Senator Burdick's office that was touched upon by the gentleman that spoke prior to me was the denial rate, the instant Oregon handgun checks, instant check system denial rate. Now, this is through March of 99. My Exhibit A has through April of 1999, and I've highlighted or marked the updated current figures. Now, using their March figures, you'll see that out of 135,000 transactions, 3,750 were denied. Now, breaking it down, 1,333 was because of a convicted felon tried to purchase a gun. 1,333. So, were there 1,333 arrests? There were 703 denials because individuals on probation. So let's add these two numbers. Were there over 2,000 arrests? No. And like Senator Bryant, I was amazed and I was shocked. And I was shocked because the Oregon State Police has 2,000 names, addresses, dates of birth of felons that tried to purchase a gun, and they can only come up with 275 arrests. 2,000, over 2,000 of them. Instead, they want to keep track of the 136,000 plus law-abiding, innocent members of this society that purchase a gun. I am shocked, and I am appalled. I am appalled that they still have this number right now as we speak, and still there's only 275 arrests. Expansion on this bill, as testified earlier by Senator Bryan, if I recall, if my memory serves me well, was that this will not reduce violent crime. That's true. What it will do is increase the names, the information of law-abiding citizens in the data banks of the Oregon State Police. And they do nothing with this information. Well, strike that. I mean, maybe they do something with that information. But what they need to do is stop worrying about the 136,000 law-abiding citizens, and let's worry about the 3,000 convicts, the felons, the probation violators, the violent criminals that tried to purchase a gun. Thank you for the opportunity to testify before you. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to entertain those questions.
Thank you, Mr. Martinez. We appreciate your testimony.
Thank you.
Chuck Wilson. Good morning. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Tuck Wilson, Portland lawyer, chairman, Oregonians Against Gun Violence. And in light of Ginny's testimony, I guess I'm also out of the closet. I am, Mr. Chairman, a gun owner. I'm here on behalf of Oregonians Against Gun Violence and the Oregon Coalition for Safe Schools, Streets, and Homes, formed just this year to encourage this legislative initiative. A list of the organizations supporting 700 is being distributed to you now. Let me quickly recap why we support Senate Bill 700. First of all, the problem originates in the United States Code. It has to do with the definition of who is a gun dealer. And because of the nature of that definition, it permits certain hobbyists to sell firearms free of the requirements for background checks that apply to others who sell firearms in the ordinary course as dealers. Until 1989, Oregon defined dealers. But in that year, Oregon relinquished its definition of dealers to the federal government and adopted the federal definition and thereby adopted the problem. So the loophole became the problem in 1989 when we changed the law and no longer defined dealer ourselves. Under federal law, states have the jurisdiction to legislate in the area of firearms and to adopt stricter regulations where they choose to do so. Background checks since 1989 have been proven to be useful in denying sales to those who shouldn't purchase firearms, as has been testified to by the state police. The Portland police will also testify to the incidents of sales at gun shows in the Portland area that have come to their attention. The state police has adopted an effective background check, instant check capability. We believe that instant check capability should be extended to long guns as well. There should be a uniform method for conducting the instant check at gun shows and at dealers. Throughout the state, there should not be a two-tiered background check system. We believe that requiring background checks of gun purchasers will reduce sales to disqualified persons. And certainly sales to disqualified persons is a reason for concern. Just Monday of this week, the National Shooting Sports Foundation issued a press statement saying that they now supported national legislation to require background checks at gun shows. And that is a very important step for this organization to take. This is the organization that represents all of the manufacturers of firearms and ammunition in this country. I know that there are amendments which have been urged that would degrade law enforcement capability in the state of Oregon. I fear, Mr. Chairman, that that would be a poison pill to defeat the efforts made to deal with this problem. If that were to occur, I believe it would be transparent to the public. Thank you so much for your patience and time this morning.
Thank you, Mr. Wilson. We appreciate your testimony.
Henry Reeves.
Good morning, Mr. Reeves, and welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. My name is Henry M. Reeves, and I reside east of Oregon in a rural situation. I'm pleased to see Representative Gianelli here on this committee this morning because I wasn't aware that she had that assignment, and she represents our part of Yamhill County. I represent myself only, and because I do, I wish to share some personal experiences with you so that you understand my position on the legislation before you. I have hunted since I was 14 years old, and that was some 58 years ago. Does anyone here exceed that length of time? I think not. I have hunted in a half dozen states with a wide variety of game, but in all truthfulness, I really like to hunt waterfowl the most. After World War II, under the GI Bill, I went to college, studied wildlife management, including wildlife law enforcement. I worked as a state conservation officer in Idaho, as well as a U.S. Game Management Agent in Texas. Twice, I had guns raised on me while I was in the performance of my duties. Thus, I have had experience from the opposite end of the gun barrel. One learns much about people and guns while serving as a law enforcement officer. Let me assure you that there are quite a few crazies out there, if you want to use that terminology, as well as otherwise solid citizens who, in a fit of uncontrolled passion or rage, resort to the use of a gun simply because one is handy. Aside from that, I had a nephew who was murdered several years ago by his own gun when he picked up two hitchhikers. They forced him to drive to a rural area in southeastern Idaho, and when he had attempted to defend himself, they overpowered him, seized his gun, and killed him. He left a wife and four young children. His assailants are still behind bars. So much for the argument that folks need guns to defend themselves. Besides being a hunter, I own a number of guns, and I'm very proud of many of them. But to me, they have a very high value simply because of fine memories of the hunt and companionships on that hunt, if for no other reason. Because of my background and experience, I strongly favor the proposed bills and urge that where possible, they be strengthened. The causes of gun violence are many, and we'd be most foolish to think that there is but one solution. However, there is no better place to begin than to establish a system by which all gun sales are recorded and preserved into perpetuity. Furthermore, as a gun owner, I would not object to the registration of my guns. In closing, one comment, I understand that there's legislation that would provide that school children be educated about guns at public expense in schools. I think this is pointless, so long as nothing is done about the type of gun violence that we see in TV and through other media. Our children simply have more important and more positive things to be learning than learning more about guns. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Reeves. We appreciate your coming this morning to testify. Robert Gordon. Good morning, Mr. Gordon. Welcome back to the committee.
Good morning. Thank you. Well, I'm opposed. Oh, I guess for the record. My name is Robert Gordon. I'm from Gresham, Oregon. And I'm opposed to Senate Bill 700. This bill takes a position that all the voters in your district are criminals and they must prove their innocence. This bill does not state any goals. How much will it reduce crime? By what percent? Would it prevent a tragedy like Columbine High School in Littleton, Colorado? There apparently were straw buyers there. It would tax a human right. You have the right to defend yourself. And as I stated, it makes the assumption that if you want a gun, you must have a criminal background. There was testimony at the Senate hearing from the Superintendent of State Police that described how this system has worked. A subject was arrested on a charge of murder and a weapon was recovered. They found out he was ineligible to own a handgun, and the police weren't sure how he got it. They traced the gun, found out a female had purchased it, and they found out she was a suspect's girlfriend. This is how the system works. It's the most eloquent description of the failure of the system. Someone is dead because a criminal used a straw buyer to make the purchase for him. The much vaunted paper trails, background checks, and licensed dealers in the naive belief that they will stop criminals is of little consolation to the victim. I need an explanation. Why did this murderer have someone go through all the trouble at a licensed dealer if he could have bought it himself from somebody that didn't have a license? There was other testimony from a Portland police officer that described straw purchases at gun shows. Again, somebody who wanted a gun got it through someone else. There's the General Accounting Office put out a publication, and it said specifically, also denied applicants may have friends or spouses without a criminal record make the purchases from dealers for them. Charles Moose, the people that are looking for ways to purchase guns outside of our legal system are very bright people. This bill is not about stopping crime. There was other written testimony from a Daniel Close that said criminal background checks prohibited 242,000 criminals and other prohibited persons from purchasing guns. Well, I've just told you about straw purchasers. Now, if 242,000 got stopped, who couldn't argue that a million criminals used straw purchasers and got guns anyway? And how accurate is the 242,000 criminals? In approximately 50% of the cases in which persons appear to have a criminal history record based upon an initial name search, they're eventually found to be false hits. Conversely, it is likely that some purchasers with criminal records will go unidentified as they use fictitious information. In short, name searches are not as accurate as fingerprint identifications. This was in Journal of Criminal Law and Criminology, which was quoted by Daniel Close as containing some information in another article. Are these people really dangerous felons? In two jurisdictions, in this, General Accounting Office found that all of the denials were for unpaid parking tickets and other traffic offenses. These are dangerous felons.
Okay. Now, Mr. Gordon, I need to point out that the Oregon background check system would weed out those kinds of incorrect information.
Okay.
So please go ahead.
All right. There's a lot of attention paid to the misuse of firearms, and this Journal of Criminal Law and Criminology, Volume 86, Number 1, Fall 1995, there was a study done that says that there were approximately between 2.1 to 2.5 million defensive uses of a firearm here in the U.S., which vastly outnumbers the number of deaths due to firearms. Senate Bill 700 also involves record keeping.
Mr. Gordon,
yes.
I don't believe that Senate Bill 700 involves record keeping. It doesn't approach the issue. I believe it's silent on record keeping, leaves current law alone.
There is a... Okay, I was reading the other 2535.
I'll ask you to wrap up within the next minute or two, please, so we can get these other witnesses
out. What it does is it's a poll tax. That those who exercise their most basic of human rights, their ability to own, to mean the powers to preserve their life, to charge the fee to protect their life. That's my testimony, if you want the short version.
Well, we appreciate that, Mr. Gordon. Appreciate your coming this morning. Thank you. Kevin Starrett. Four more. I'll just keep this down. You have to go to the floor and go to the floor. Good morning. Welcome to the committee.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Kevin Starrett, Oregon Firearms Federation. I'd like to thank my members who are out on the steps supporting me at the moment.
I thought that was healthy choices. Nice try, Mr.
I don't think those kids are here for that.
Clarification, Mr. Chairman. Are we dealing with both bills at the moment?
Yes.
Okay. Oregon Firearms Federation and Gun Owners of America oppose both bills. We've dealt extensively with our objections to 700. I believe there are major technical problems with both bills, but I'm not going to address them because I think it's immaterial. The real problem is we're expanding background checks and databases of law-abiding people. And Senator Neil Bryant came in, and as we have heard for years, every time we had a new gun control bill, the proponents of the bill always opened it by saying, this won't solve the problem. And in fact, this won't solve the problem. What it will do is will continue to erode our liberties. So I oppose, and Gun Owners of America and Oregon Firearms Federation oppose both 700 and 2535 because, quite frankly, I don't think there's any justification for a background check on a law-abiding person to conduct or engage or exercise a constitutional right.
Mr. Starrett, if I don't know somebody, how do I determine that the person is law-abiding?
I don't know that there's a way you can do that. And while I understand the concerns about transferring a firearm to a potential criminal, there is an unintended consequence to this. And quite frankly, the unintended consequence is the almighty database. And I was excoriated in the Senate hearing for claiming to be the most cynical member of Oregon's gun lobby, but I'll gladly say that I am. I don't trust people with databases. I come from New York. Those databases have been abused. I don't see any reason to keep a record on somebody who's proven to be a law-abiding citizen. I don't believe in the check to begin with, but certainly retention of records has absolutely no justification whatsoever. And we've heard testimony that the police need to be protected. Well, the police are not there to be protected by us. The police are there to protect us. And after what we saw happen in Colorado, I have some serious concerns that the police are capable of protecting us. And the short version is that Senate Bill 700 and Senate Bill 2535 both create an additional database that has the potential for misuse, and I predict that it will be misused because databases really serve no purpose if they contain the names of law-abiding people, unless, as we have seen for the last 20 years, one step after another, first we banned cheap handguns, then we banned semi-automatic rifles, then every single one of these steps was supposed to solve the problem, and it hasn't. And this won't solve the problem. What it will do is just open the door for more record keeping, more databasing, more abuse of law-abiding citizens, and we oppose both bills.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Sterritt, can you share with us one case of the state police misusing the current rate, database that they have?
I can share with you an instance of the sheriff's misusing it, yes.
That wasn't my question. It was the state police currently keep the records, right?
The state police keep the records, but apparently those records are shared with the county sheriffs.
Second follow-up, Mr. Chair. Okay, Mr. Sterritt, tell me about the county sheriff misusing the record.
At one time in this state, there was a criminal penalty attached to misusing those records. In Multnomah County, in a civil case, disclosure of legitimate firearms transactions until 1996, disclosure of information about those transactions was illegal, and there was a criminal penalty attached to it. Prior to 1996, in a Multnomah County civil case, members of the Multnomah County Sheriff's Department who worked at the Pistol License Division came into a civil trial and disclosed information about legitimate transactions, one of the participants in the trial. When we pointed out to the district attorney that they had violated the law and that, in fact, there was a criminal penalty attached to what they did, the response we received from the district attorney was, believe it or not, that the police in question did not know what the law was, therefore they could not be held accountable, in spite of the fact that this was their particular division and specialty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate you coming to testify. Jack Peters. Jack Peters here. I'll call up the gentleman in the blue shirt, dark suit, who didn't have a chance to sign up, and I'll have three others, but I want to make sure I cover everyone. And since I don't know your name, sir, I just had to identify you as such. Please come up and identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Representative Mannix, and people on the committee for allowing me to be part of this process. My name is Joel West from Portland, Oregon. Citizen of Portland and the United States. Also a person who has been privileged to live and teach abroad for a number of years in the country of Australia, a country which bans the use of guns, assault rifles, and handguns for the ordinary citizen, a country where people enjoy a full range of freedoms and a quality of life that this country might seek to emulate. Incidentally, for the record, I'll also mention that since I'm not a native Oregonian, in the 10 years that I've been here, I have met Oregonians who grew up in Oregon, where hunting was a tradition for them, a tradition that was handed down from their parents and their grandparents. And I've come to see an appreciation for that way of life, even though it's alien to the way I grew up. I certainly can respect that way of life. But that way of life is not about handguns, it's not about assault rifles, and it's not about concealed weapons. This morning, I've listened to a number of points about people being inconvenienced. I've listened to how gun show dealers would have to be inconvenienced by doing background checks, and some of them may not want to pursue that line of work anymore. Well, I would respect, I would point out that blacksmiths were inconvenienced, so to speak, when automobiles became popular. They adjusted and survived. Likewise, the people who manufactured mechanical typewriters and repaired them became, shall we say, inconvenienced when computers took over. They adapted and survived.
I'm tempted to ask, just because you brought up the topic, should we take the position that freedom of the press refers literally to the antique press devices and would not include the electronic media because of dynamic changes?
Repeat that. I know it's a joke, but please repeat it.
Well, should we take the position that freedom of the press should be taken literally and applies only to those who work with the print media and not allow for the fact that it would today include electronic media? You just sort of took me in that direction. Go ahead.
Okay. If I were to respond to just one point here today having to do with Proposition 700 and the requirement for background checks and responsibility of both seller and buyer at gun shows, I would respond to this one point. That is the point that's made by Mr. Martinez here this morning and by countless other patrons of the NRA, that law-abiding citizens are being punished by asking for any measures of further accountability and responsibility in the ownership of their weapons. My response to Mr. Martinez, to the NRA, and to all the advocates of that line of thinking is that everybody is a law-abiding citizen until, for the first time, they use a gun to annihilate their fellow man and their fellow student. Everybody is a law-abiding citizen until they use a gun for the first time. So creating and fostering a kind of us-them mentality where convicts continue to be trashed for the normal populace is not the way to deal with this problem.
Are you suggesting we should do away with the prohibition on felons prohibiting firearms for 15 years after conviction?
Oh, absolutely not. Absolutely not. Instead of that, I would suggest that that gun owners be required to do the same thing that persons who drive automobiles be required to do. That being that automobiles are not designed to annihilate other people, they're designed to get us from point A to point B, but in order to use an automobile, it's considered a privilege. One has to be a certain age, one has to pass a test, one has to carry a photo ID. So until that day occurs, I would suggest that if gun shows want to sell guns without requirements, that these guns should be rigidly classified as antiques, where the bullet be placed into the gun one at a time at the gunshot, and then the gun reloaded with another bullet so that it could be shot. The law-abiding citizens, yes, the law-abiding citizens that we're talking about, the 10 to 21-year-olds to whom guns are real cool, like baggy pants are cool, and riding in a Jeep Wrangler are cool, they want what they want, and they will use means to get their status symbol in the least amount of inconvenience to them. Mr. Mannix and people on the committee, I ask that you stand tall today in the name of civility and that you move Bill 700 out of committee and through the House and pass it for the safety and security of all of us. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. West. Representative Gianella, Mr. West, Representative Gianella.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. West, as far as Australia, are the guns just registered or are they outlawed?
That's a great question. I don't pretend to be an expert on this, but I do know that the guns are outlawed, and I understand that they are outlawed because there was one killing of a number of people that created a lot of media attention with a handgun. There was one mass execution, not at all on the scale of Littleton, Colorado, which is just, well, that's our execution for the beginning of this year. There was one execution, one mass execution, and people acted in the name of civility and safety and public welfare to recognize the danger and eliminate it.
Well, Mr. Chair, please. Did they willingly give them up?
I'm not close enough to the situation to be able to answer that question, but as far as I know, a civil war was not begun over it.
Further questions?
Just one final one, and then I'm finished. Do you feel that that leaves the citizens of Australia helpless?
Having lived there and worked there as a teacher for several years, I don't feel that leaves them helpless. On the contrary, I think it leaves them living a much more relaxed and worry-free and stress-free life, a life that where their taxes can be used to something other than building prisons and dealing with a burgeoning court system.
Thank you.
All right, Representative Simmons. All right. Apparently there are no further questions. Thank you, Mr. West.
Thank you.
Manny Martinez.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I wonder if I could just make a comment that the crime rate in Australia since that ban has gone up 31%.
That's my understanding, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Martinez, good morning.
Records,
and welcome to the committee.
My name is Manuel Martinez.
And the proud father of Luis Martinez.
A what?
I hope the proud father of Luis Martinez. Is he a relation of yours?
Yeah, my son.
That was meant to be a compliment, Mr. Martinez.
Okay, thank you. My name is Manuel Martinez, and I'm here to oppose gun registration, which this is what this bill is about. This bill is not fighting crime. I heard here the good senators and good representatives came over here and gave you stories about how this thing is going to come fight crime. I don't going to give you any story about crime, because if I tell you some of the things that I experienced myself, it was not done with gun, it was with knife, will make everybody here in this room puke. But nobody says anything about controlled knife or controlled bats or controlled ropes. One of the things that I'm here mainly is because this Bill 700, or anything that has to do with gun registration, will not solve crimes. Crime was not invented in the century, in 20th century. Crime has been in place since biblical times. Now, the gun control people think that guns is the one to create crime, which is not. I have a concealed weapon permit. I'm a hunter. I'm a competitive shooter. I shoot trap. I shoot pistols. And one of the things that happened in this country is the lack of kids, and grown-up people are not taught how to use guns safely, or what is the reason for guns. These people who advocate the for gun control, I would like to know what happened when the former correction Michael director Michael Franti was killed and was assassinated in front of the building. I didn't see any of these people said anything about knife. So, in fact, there was two kids now. They're going to go up. They kill two older people with bats, and they're going to go out in parole. I don't see any of these gun people feeling any pity for those people who were assassinated and murdered. I came from a country which I see gun control. I lost that country. That was my native one. How am I going to lose this one, my adopted one? And I, back in the many years ago, I fought dictatorship. When I was in school, when I was in college, Batista dictatorship. I fought the present one in Cuba also, with the Castro. Both of those regimes have gun control. In those dictatorships and tyrannies, they, when they claim that they have gun control, they say they don't have crime. Of course, the people don't commit crime. It's the government who committed crime. Of course, they don't use it. They don't call them crime. They call them necessary measurements to save, you know, the public. And they are the ones who commit the crime.
And actually, in the last year or two, Cuba has seen a tremendous increase in the incidence of crime, largely due to economic factors.
Exactly. And it's, those crime are committed by the government. And, of course, they, you talk to those people, they say, oh, the citizens don't commit crime, and the government does that. And but they can't control down there. And so these bills that you see coming up, as a matter of fact, there are about several hundred bills already in this country, from the federal government to the state, has to do with controlled crimes, and, well, they're not doing it. What do you think this one will do? This is going to be, what, the 301, the 302, another bill in the book? Why we don't go toughen criminals? Why don't we talk to the people, to the law enforcement, and to the courts to be toughen people? Okay, you want to buy a gun, and you want to, I'm not opposed to a background check. Me, I'm a felon. But why to keep the register of my gun? Why to keep what they want to know, what kind of a gun I buy? I am the one who committed the crime. The gun is not. I should be clear, not the gun. If I'm clear, what I should raise in my gun? For what purpose? Now, if you caught someone who commit crime with a gun, do something to them. Put them in the galleys. I don't know what they're going to do. Put them in jail. Throw the key away. But don't go against these things that saying to you, this gun bill, the gun control bill that control crime, they won't control crime. This is nothing more than hypocrisy. This is another stuff to bring the paper and say to you, well, here, we're doing something. We're doing nothing. We absolutely do nothing. We are just another picture in the paper saying, yeah, I'm doing this. I'm the greatest thing in the world. Because I'm doing this, we're not doing that. We're not going to the crime. We don't want to see what is the problem. We don't want to get into this criminal. And now we, what they're doing here is to make it, this thing, an appeal when you're going to take a medicine, put a little flavor in it to swallow it. Yeah, this is going to do it. It won't do it. Absolutely won't do it. Now, I have here.
Martinez, I'm going to need to interrupt. I've been advised a couple of minutes ago that there's a call of the House.
Okay.
I was trying to give you a chance to wrap
that's
up
it.
Without
interrupting. That's all I have to say.
All right. Representative Bowman, can we defer? Do you have a question?
I do have a question.
All right,
but
Representative Bowman, go ahead with your one question, please.
Thank you. Mr. Gonzalez, I just want to say that I don't think anybody here said that any of these bills will stop crime.
Well,
I think what people said was that that we should try to limit access to people who are not legally able to purchase a firearm. That's a lot different than saying that passing these bills will prevent crime. My question to you, though, is do you agree that we should, as lawmakers, develop a policy that ensures that people who are not legally eligible to carry firearms are not able to obtain those firearms?
Okay, let me start by correcting you, Representative. My name is not Gonzalez. It's Martinez.
Martinez. I'm sorry, Mr. Okay. Martinez. I heard
so, now, I am not opposed to if you have any law or bill that go against criminals in order to prevent criminals, but I oppose any gun registration absolutely of people who are not criminals. And this is what we're talking about. We are mixing apples and oranges.
All right, now I'm going to interrupt. We're 5 minutes into the call of the House. There's members of the House waiting for us, so I'm going to have to cut you off, Mr. Martinez. I'm going to advise Rod Harder and Russ Spencer and Kevin Campbell that what we will do is we will call you up first tomorrow morning to testify. I apologize to having to carry you over, but I recognize you gentlemen are all in the building every day, so I can call you tomorrow. That's why I also called that other gentleman out of order. So we are adjourned.